your host, Jeff Ragavan, and welcome to the Alchemy Podcast, where we're on a quest to explore the intersection of cannabis, compliance, and creative in the marketing world today and beyond. Welcome back to another episode of Alchemy. Joining me today is Paul Rosen. Paul is the founder and managing director at Breakwater Venture Capital, a private venture capital fund, and the co-founder of Pantry, which is a premium cannabis-infused food brand. Paul, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Jeff, what a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Fantastic. So, Paul, I was pretty excited to talk to you, mainly because I have a love for food, and also because, you know, you've done quite a bit over the several years now in the cannabis space. So I thought as a good way to start off the show, really talk to us about the whole mission around Pantry, because there's been a lot of buzz around it, and I've seen some really beautiful packaging and heard some really delicious things about it.
Definitely. So Pantry was informed first and foremost by my own dissatisfaction as a cannabis consumer to be able to find the kind of products that I wanted to consume. And specifically, what I mean by that, Jeff, is that I'm pretty careful at this point in my life about what I eat, and I'm pretty healthy in terms of most of my trends. I'm exercising, I'm meditating, but I'm really focusing on eating well. And to me, I've always looked at cannabis as a wellness product and a product that promotes health and wellness. But mostly across cannabis, the form factors that we consume cannabis in are not really pro-wellness. So even though I've smoked a reasonably high quantity of joints in my life, I don't do that anymore because I just don't want to torque my lungs. I never really found vaping that satisfying. So that would move me to the edible category. The problem with the edible category, in large part, is that it's not particularly healthy food. What it is primarily is kind of like low shelf candy infused with THC. And what the consumer is gravitating is how much THC does that package, that chocolate bar, that gummy bear have. And Pantry was meant to elevate the conversation away from just the THC to consider the other ingredients in your food. And we can deliver the THC, but there's no reason why we need to deliver it alongside a number of unhealthy ingredients. Why not deliver it in a more healthy package that tastes delicious, that's been designed by chefs, but that is pro-wellness? So it really began with me creating a product that I couldn't find for myself on dispensary shelves across North America.
Let's talk a little bit about the actual health of the product.
Yeah. So, you know, we have different products, but primarily we're trying to be low sugar, or at least healthy sugar, rather than processed sugar. We're trying to be low trans fat. We're trying to be non sort of GMO. And specifically, we do have also a commitment not towards all of our products being vegan, but towards vegan diabetic friendly products. So a typical Pantry product is going to have less sugar. It's going to have, in some instances, depending on the product, some adaptogens. It's going to have a bit of a keto focus, which is a diet that focuses on high good fat, low carb, low calorie, low sugar, and it's going to taste delicious. And I'll say that sort of our final iteration product isn't there yet, in that whenever you're trying to create new consumer patterns, you have to sort of meet the market halfway. And so I see that now the products that we have are, in my opinion, healthier, delicious alternatives to most of the other edibles out there, but they're not really what I see as the final generation product for Pantry. Inevitably, we're going to continue as we sort of hopefully and continue to convert customers to the sort of Pantry way of thinking. We're going to lean harder into the category of functional healthy food with THC or CBD as one of the ingredients, but not necessarily the only ingredient that the consumer would be paying attention to.
And you guys have launched in California. And I'm just curious, from a growth perspective, like, what are the plans on extending beyond California proper?
Like all entrepreneurs, you know, I am thinking about a global brand here. And I think Pantry is going to be a global brand. But we chose to launch in California for a number of reasons. One is total addressable market is pretty substantial given the population. Two, Cannabis is pretty culturally and socially acceptable in California. It has a long history. And so you're not having to sort of educate consumers about cannabis generally. You're now trying to distinguish your cannabis product from other cannabis products in the marketplace. But we're at a point now where we feel that we've got a good growth trajectory in California, and we're going to continue to lean hard into it. But our next markets to move into are going to be likely Colorado, which we're close to announcing that we have struck an arrangement to bring Pantry products to Colorado. I'm definitely deep in discussions with some of my Canadian counterparts. I am a Canadian and came up in the cannabis industry in Canada. So I anticipate that you'll be able to buy.
Who would have known?
Yes.
Who would have known you were from Canada?
My politeness is shining through. But I think you'll see Pantry products available for sale in California, Colorado, Nevada, and Canada within the next 6 months. And then from there, we're going to go state by state. Right now, there are 33 states that have cannabis programs, but not all of them, Jeff, have edible programs. So inevitably, I predict we'll be available wherever edible products are available, state, nationally, or internationally.
And so, you know, I've seen a bunch of the different products that you guys have. And, you know, I think the packaging is beautiful. The products look great. And, you know, I know that you're also teaming up with a lot of chefs. One thing that I wanted to ask you is I noticed that you guys have a cannabis infused olive oil. And so what is the use case with the olive oil, and how would you cook with it?
That's a good question, in that we didn't entirely know the answer to that when we launched the olive oil. And sometimes sometimes as an entrepreneur, you're going to have to go with a gut instinct, and you're not going to be able to prove it using, you know, the sort of metrics that an investor might want. But as we have been self-funded, we were able to back up our beliefs with a go-to-market. So we did a limited run of olive oil 4 months ago, and we sold 100 bottles in 3 hours, which surprised us. We weren't expecting that degree of demand. And what we're finding is that chefs in particular love the olive oil. Chefs that have that are on Instagram TV are constantly reaching out to us now to use the olive oil in recipes. So wherever you would use olive oil, whether it's as a salad dressing, or whether it's could be a topping on your hummus, or whether it could be an ingredient in your omelet, with microdosing being the paramount goal here, we're finding that our olive oil is just being used to replace conventional olive oil when the consumer wants an infused experience. So wherever you might use olive oil as an end product or as an ingredient, you can use the Pantry infused olive oil, but it has that extra ingredient that traditional olive oil does not have. But chefs are using it to make pasta. They're using it to make fish. They're using it to just create additional flavor, or they're using it as an oil to cook alongside. And what we're finding is it's being offered in a microdose. So if you were dressing a salad, you're going to put maybe, and the salad's going to serve four people, you're going to put anywhere between 5 and 10 milligrams of THC expressed through the olive oil, and that's going to get everyone at the table pleasantly elevated, but not zonked.
Got it. Okay. So I was curious if it was for that use case, or there was like some type of delicious terpene that might have like a rosemary or citrus aroma that would pair well, you know? So you just answered that.
I'm sure the chefs would tell you much better than layperson, Paul, what it pairs with. But what we've seen, you know, just on the amount of chefs that have posted on Instagram, is that they're using it exactly as they said, the way they would use traditional olive oil, rather than choosing specific pairings.
Is it safe for me to say that this is really kind of focused on the foodie market, or would you say your target audience is much wider than that market?
I think definitely the foodie market is really our target per se, but I think, you know, for me, the foodie market is people that eat food. I know I'm saying that a little bit glibly, but it's everybody. And I don't mean it like one thing I don't want to ever be perceived as an elite brand that's luxury. I kind of bristle at those terms. I'm of strong belief that one of the greatest ways we can improve the health of ourselves and the planet is by what we eat. That's probably the most primary thing we do that influences our health. And you don't have to be a foodie to appreciate that the better the ingredients, the better you feel, the better you feel, the better you're able to perform. So I'm not, you know, I love when real foodies embrace our product, which happens a lot. Chefs that have Michelin credentials, I love that because it's a validation. But I'm not looking at that as our necessarily our destination market. I take comfort and succor when we're validated by them. But I want everyone that's into healthy eating, which should be everybody that's into eating in a best case scenario, to see Pantry as a solution, not a problem.
So, you know, we've had a lot of guests on the show, you know, ranging from large MSOs to celebrities and kind of the full gamut. And one thing that's come up in conversation, you know, when it comes to cannabis products in general is a lot of folks out there, for one, have somewhat of an issue with loyalty. Because they just don't have a loyalty towards a brand yet. It's getting there, but it's not there yet. And then there's also a dosage concern, especially when it comes to edibles. And I know there's a lot of companies out there that are starting to almost, you know, create products based on how you want to feel. Like, do you want to be, you know, in a moment of zen? You know, do you want to connect with people? You know, what have you? And so when you're talking about, you know, products in Pantry that are both from an olive oil perspective or from an actual dessert or a cookie or whatever that might be, are you guys giving any information out there to customers like, hey, if you want to feel like this, you should do X, Y, and Z, or you should eat this much, so that people actually know? Because I feel like with some of your products that look so delicious, like the bonbons, I would imagine it's probably hard to just eat one.
Yeah, that's a key question. And the whole experience thing is something that I have been sort of watching and tracking for about 7 years. I think the first company I ever met is a Colorado company called Ebu that codified cannabis according to experience. This would be create. This would be chill. This would be, you know, amore. This is your love potion. This is your aphrodisiac. This is going to help you go to bed. And what I have found is largely that is a promise that has not been kept to the consumer. And it has been so far more of a marketing play than an actual science play. And I'll defend that against anyone that doesn't agree with that. And so I think you've got to be pretty careful when you start creating these niche experiences that you say cannabis specifically can offer, especially when you understand sort of the supply chain. So for me, the categories that I think we can legitimately speak to are day and night. And I think that's something that we're confident by combining other sort of products that are not cannabis into our cannabis products, we can start to create experiences that would suggest this is more of a daytime product. It's more for energy, could be for creativity, but no two users are exactly the same. And this is a nighttime product, meaning it's going to help you sleep. And sleep is another health crisis we have. And so we're getting ready to launch a kind of a night bite, a keto flavored or keto influenced night bite. And it's going to have adaptogens that are, you know, helpful for sleep, all natural plant-based sleep solutions. And it's going to have an indica oil that goes into it, because indica definitely is, you know, a bit more nighttime than daytime, a bit more chill than activate. So I'm comfortable with sativa representing more of an energetic, creative flow, and I'm comfortable with indica representing more of a chill, calmed out flow. But even within that, there's a lot of variation. And when I see companies promising that this is going to be for sex, and this is going to be for when you want to write that next chapter of your novel, and this is going to be for when you're like want to solve a math problem, I think that's just marketing and the science isn't there yet. We're having enough of a challenge right now in cannabis, just creating a predictable high, never mind a predictable experience backed on that high. So I do think that it's important. And then I'm going to take it to your loyalty question. Loyalty is scarce in the cannabis industry because, one, there are supply chain issues keeping your product on a shelf every day. And if a consumer comes in to the store and can't buy your product, they're likely to buy someone else's rather than wait. But a lot of the loyalty is that generally in cannabis, we have not appropriately and proportionately respected our customer at all, in my opinion. And I say that as a consumer first. And so if you want loyalty from a customer, you've got to give them respect in terms of looking out for their best interest. And promising them an outcome that you can't deliver is not a good way to create loyalty. If you can promise an outcome My outcome is health and wellness. I can promise that outcome with Pantry. I'm less comfortable saying that I can, this is before you run a marathon or this is just before you go to bed. Although when it comes to just before you go to bed, I'm getting more comfortable. But what I don't want to do is make a promise to a customer, which sounds great at a high level marketing perspective, but I don't actually deliver that promise because that I think is going to interfere with the goodwill I'm trying to establish between myself and my customer. It's like a fiat. It's a bond. You're trusting me with your body. So I'm going to trust you by not selling you bullshit.
I like that. So I wanted to kind of go into, first off, congrats on Pantry. I think it's pretty cool and definitely something that I know a lot of people are going to try and really want more of. So I think that was definitely a need in the market. And so I hope you guys expand to lots and lots of other markets and even international markets for that matter. Because I kind of look at this as such a good opportunity for amazing chefs really to get in with you. And I know a lot of chefs, personally, who have been looking to get into this space as well, especially in New York when it becomes legal. Yeah. But I wanted to also ask you, as you've really been in the space for a while through the years, you know, how are you looking at the current state of cannabis, both from a Canadian perspective and from a U.S. perspective? And secondly, where do you see the markets really going into the next year?
Those are important questions, without a doubt. You know, I'm a bull. I've always been a bull. I came into this industry in 2012 when, you know, to quote Dorothy Parker, there was no there yet. We were aiming at a target that we couldn't even see. But I had this strong belief and a knowledge that cannabis was already an intensely popular product, but we needed to create a regulated industry to deliver that product to promote patient and customer efficacy. And I feel that cannabis, when you separate what's happening from a public market perspective and you just drill down to the business of cannabis and you say, how was the business of cannabis? It gets healthier QOQ quarter upon quarter as for years behind us and ideally and almost assuredly for years ahead of us. So I see the cannabis industry is just getting bigger, better, and healthier every day. Now, at the same time, the cannabis industry requires a lot of capital. And anytime there's a chill in the capital markets, it will affect the cannabis industry, just like it will affect other capital intensive industries. But I try to tell people, you can't measure the cannabis industry by the stock prices of the cannabis companies. That is an absolute false equivalency. I measure it by the real economic data. What are sales in any jurisdiction month to month? Are they growing? They're all assuredly growing. Even in Colorado, Jeff, they're still growing in year 8, which is a very good sign. Even in Washington State, they're still growing. What I see, though, is that in the next year, we're going to have rapid consolidation, meaning that one of the issues with our industry is there may be too many participants and not on it. If it was a game of musical chairs, we don't have enough chairs and we have too many players right now. And I don't wish any players not to succeed. But when the music stops and the music is available, is the availability of the capital, you kind of see who has a chair and who does not have a chair. So unfortunately, I predict that, and I'm pretty sure this is going to happen. I don't think I'm going too far out on a limb, that there's going to be a number of failures, companies that are operating right now that will not be here in a year from now. And I mean, like, not one or two, I mean hundreds to thousands. And that's because those companies aren't, you know, for a number of reasons, but the long and the short of it is cannabis companies have continued to need to tap capital markets to grow their enterprise. Even the biggest ones, Canopy Growth Corporation, Cronus Group, Aurora, or in the United States, Curaleaf Harvest, GTI, Cresco, inevitably, one way or the other, they find their way back to the capital markets because they haven't yet created cash behemoths that can self-fund growth. And so the challenge is going to be not all companies in the market today are able to attract investment capital. Only quite a fewer amount than a year ago. And there was a time, and I came of age in this time, when any company that had cannabis in their blueprint or in their game plan was able to raise capital. And we raised capital for I mean, the industry, not myself personally, but I participate in a lot of these raises for all sorts of companies without doing the necessary macro due diligence on what's going to be the total addressable market and what is the company's competitive advantage in that market. And this is going to be the year where, as capital markets have been challenged and COVID has just challenged markets even further, this is going to be the year where a lot of companies can't keep on raising capital. And in the absence of raising capital, they're either going to have to get acquired or they're going to have to spin out. And unfortunately, there's not enough acquirers to acquire all the companies that can't continue on their own. So it's going to be a tough year at a micro level. But at a macro level, what also is going to happen is more states are going to come online in the States, more jurisdictions internationally are going to introduce medical or recreational cannabis programs, and more cannabis is going to be bought and sold in the regulated market every quarter for pretty much the next minimum decade. I'm sure of that. On a global level, every quarter, there will be more regulated cannabis sold than the quarter before. And that will happen basically in perpetuity. I don't mean 2 or 3% jumps. I'm talking 15 to 20% quarterly jumps on the annual amount of regulated cannabis being consumed. So the future is bright white for us right now. It couldn't be brighter. But there are going to be some short-term challenges and there's going to be some failures along the way. And the market's job from now is to start engaging in analysis about which companies are built for the long-term and ideally to back those companies up with capital, because there will be some massive businesses that are built on the back of the globalization of cannabis, which is what's happening right now, and it's picking up steam all the way. So if that's not too much of a geeked out answer, at a macro level, the industry has never looked better to me, but at a micro level, it's challenging.
So what one little kind of final note, you know, there's obviously we've been dealing with a massive pandemic, and, you know, it's no surprise many of us are working remote and adapting to, you know, doing business in a new way. There's been quite a bit of chatter with kind of the, you know, with this pandemic, there's a lot of cannabis folks out there who are saying, hey, this something of this nature is likely to speed up legalization across the U.S. And I think it's no surprise, you've probably seen this all over and everyone's been talking about this, but, you know, over 8 states, you know, have been deemed, you know, as cannabis is essential on the rec side, especially during all of this shutdown. And, you know, for places like California, I mean, there's reports coming in of, you know, $135 million in weekly sales and, you know, 20% increases, you know, from Washington and Nevada and Colorado. And so, you know, a lot of these cannabis companies have really been, you know, shining bright during this tough time. So, you know, kind of just in closing the show, I was curious on your side of the fence. You know, I know you're up in Canada, so things are a little different up there, but do you kind of envision the next few months after this crisis, or at least when we kind of get this crisis in order, that this will be kind of on Washington's hit list to kind of speed up as people really need to start lining the coffers with money?
Yes, absolutely. I'm a big believer in that prediction that the economic distress that COVID has caused is going to hasten the case for cannabis reform in all jurisdictions in America, but also many other jurisdictions that are contemplating legalizing cannabis. And I'll point out that the prohibition ended right in the teeth of the Great Depression. And so here you have states like in Colorado where cannabis, despite COVID, is contributing to the treasury, is hiring people, and cannabis is right now hiring people still, even despite COVID. So we are increasing our workforce, we are paying more taxes, and that should be an intoxicating combination for any regulator. But in a time of massive economic disruption, to me, it's irresistible. And we're not really talking about too far out notions here right now. 78% of Americans, more or less, live in a jurisdiction where medical or recreational cannabis is available. This is a very popular issue, Jeff, and it's a popular issue with bipartisan support. This is not a blue Democrat versus red Republican issue. You've got really meaningful bipartisan support. I kind of say as a joke that if you combine red and blue, you get green. And in that instance, it's true. So I think that two things. One is that cannabis has held up very well, and the demand for cannabis has not suffered a decline. There has been some changes in consumer habits. We're seeing a bit of a jump towards value brands now, because people, if they have less money, they're not going to stop consuming cannabis, but they're going to maybe choose less expensive products. And in the case of the flower category, there's a big range from, you know, $80 an eighth to $50 or $45 an eighth. So we are seeing a move towards value brands, but we're not seeing people stopping consuming cannabis. And at a legalization level, it to me is, first of all, for either political party right now in America, as they get ready for what will be a hotly contested election, this is a big issue that can have a dramatic effect on the outcome. So you have Trump, who has not really spoken too publicly except to express support for medical cannabis occasionally, and Biden, who has been skeptical. But one of the two parties in a close election, I think, is going to see this as a get out in front issue, and it's going to be wildly popular, and it's going to have benefit of creating more revenue for the state that the company operates in and more employment opportunities. And I'll say ultimately, the goal of any cannabis program should be to create a single cannabis market. Instead of having a gray market and a white market, we should just have one market. I don't mean kill the black market or the gray market. I mean have one unified market. And for when you do that, the contribution that the cannabis industry will make to straight treasury and to employment will be as meaningful as just about any other massive industry. And I just see that as that should have been irresistible in a time of plenty, but in a time of austerity and economic disruption, it should become uber irresistible.
Well, listen, Paul, I appreciate you coming on the show. And I will say, you know, as you're launching new products, I'm happy to be a taste tester.
Oh, you got it.
And, you know, keep up the great work, and we'll be looking for when those products come and finally hit New York. So appreciate your time.
You guys, want to thank you. I think you've got a great podcast here. I think Alchemy is providing a service to the industry, presenting us in a favorable way that we want to be seen. And, you know, every little bit helps. So ultimately, the more credible our industry is presented, and Alchemy presents us very credibly, the more it hastens the sensible cannabis reform that we need for this industry to flourish. So thank you.
Yeah, I agree. And that's really what this show is all about, is, you know, educating everybody on all of the great use cases, all the great companies, all the great business that's taking place. And, you know, this is a real industry and an important industry for the future. So thanks for that, Paul.
Thank you.
This episode of the Alchemy Podcast was brought to you by Philo. Thanks for tuning in. And if you enjoyed today's show, don't forget to subscribe and share.